President Bush will end his trip in the Middle East with Prime Minister Ariel Sharon and Prime Minister Mahmoud Abbas. The summit will feature a new Palestinian leader, a new tone in the words of Israel's leader, and a new personal commitment by America's leader. But many of the old issues remain: violence, settlements, and security. Joining us are two experts in Middle Eastern affairs, Robert Malley, who was a special assistant to President Clinton for Israeli-Arab affairs. He's in the studio and is now the Middle Eastern Project Director at the International Crisis Group. Thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
And from McLean, Virginia, Sam Lewis, who was ambassador to Israel for 8 years under Presidents Carter and Reagan. He also served in the State Department in the Clinton administration. Ambassador Lewis, thank you for being with us.
My pleasure.
Mr. Malley, all this attention on how Mahmoud Abbas is a different man than Yasser Arafat, can people kid themselves about how different his policies are or can be?
It depends what you're talking about. His policies in terms of what final settlement between Israel and the Palestinians would look like, it's probably not far from where Arafat is or from where most of the secular Arab Palestinian leadership is. Where he does differ with Arafat very clearly is that he's believed from the outset of the uprising, the Palestinian Intifada, that it was a mistake for the Palestinians, that it had to come to an end. He told us when I was in the Clinton administration, 2 weeks after it started, that it needed to end, that it was a disaster for the Palestinians. Which doesn't mean that he's going to be any softer when he negotiates, but it does mean that he has a very different view of what kind of tactics, what kind of means are available and should be used by the Palestinians to reach their goals.
Ambassador Lewis, how significant was Prime Minister Sharon's use of the word occupation to describe the Israeli presence in the West Bank this week?
Well, it was symbolically quite a moment. Throughout the years, no Israeli leaders have wanted to use the word occupation.
And I don't think even Rabin did he?
None of them ever did. Yeah. And the reason was in part the ideological argument that has been there from the beginning, that this territory had never been recognized as belonging to anybody after the Ottoman Empire. Certainly wasn't recognized internationally by more than one or two countries as belonging to Jordan. And therefore, Israel had as good a right to it as anyone else, and that you couldn't therefore be called an occupier. And somehow the word occupation carries a pejorative quality in this era beyond its legal definition. But for him to use it, particularly for him to use it, signaled, I think, to the Likud and to the right wing of the country that he has indeed moved some distance away from the positions he's always been attributed to hold of never being willing to consider giving up this territory. I think, in fact, he reached that judgment some years ago that there was going to be a Palestinian state. The issue was to make sure it was not one that could ever threaten Israel.
But I don't think we should kid ourselves and think that we now have in Ariel Sharon the person who's going to reach the historic compromise with the Palestinians. I don't think the Palestinians believe that either. Even as we're talking, settlements are expanding at a very high rate, putting in jeopardy the possibility of creating a Palestinian state. But I do think what's happening, which is what the most I think we could expect during this period while he's prime minister, is to bring the right wing in Israel closer to accepting the inevitability of a state and the reality that what's happening now is an occupation over a hostile population.
And at the same time, have Palestinians given up on the idea of the right of return, that the state they want will include parts of what is now Israel?
I don't know that the Palestinians have yet found themselves the answer to the conundrum they find themselves in. On the one hand, I think they recognize, somebody like Abu Mazen recognizes, that the scope of return can't be such that the state of Israel would no longer be a Jewish state. I think I've had enough conversations with Palestinians that makes me believe that they understand that. But they still think that the right of return as a principle, because they believe the Palestinians have been done a very severe, serious injustice when they left their homes in 1948, that they need to be in principle vindicated, that their right needs to be respected. Now, how you reconcile the recognition of a right with its non-implementation, that's the conundrum that we've faced, that they've faced, and the Israelis face. But I think at the end of the day, they know that for the most part, Palestinians will not be going to Israel. They'll be going to Palestine. They'll be staying where they are, or they'll be going to third countries. And that a symbolic number, based on family reunification or exceptional circumstances, will go to Israel.
The roadmap doesn't actually require solution of or project the solution of the right of return question until the third phase, the final settlement negotiations, 2-3 years hence. Things like the right of return and the status of Jerusalem and the final disposition of the settlements issue are none of them going to get treated seriously in the next 12 months.
I'm struck by the fact we have not mentioned Yasser Arafat's name a lot. If he's not part of the, to use an old phrase, if he's not part of the solution, could he become part of the problem in implementing an agreement?
Sure. He is part of the problem still. And at this moment, Arafat's continuing popularity, or at least political clout, if he would back up Abu Mazen's actions with it, would be very, very important. The trouble is he seems more inclined to be undermining him and limiting his scope of authority, because his sole purpose undoubtedly is to remain very much in charge. I think he is going to be a continuing headache for everybody.
Do you have a sense of urgency about events now, that the stars are aligned as well as they have been in years and as well as they're about to be, and this is an opportunity?
I certainly do. I think one of the lessons of the history of trying to make peace in the Middle East is you get, periodically, there are opportunities to make progress toward peace, usually in the wake of a war. We're in one of those moments where the deck has been reshuffled, and there is just enough new element in it to have persuaded the president to put his own prestige on the table, be much more actively seen to be a player and not just a presider over a process. But these moments generally are very short. They're a matter of weeks or months. And if they're not seized with real progress, if not a final achievement, there'll be some event in that region. Bombers is the obvious one, but there can be many others which throw the whole political process into turmoil. And I do think that the next few months is a very crucial time.
Mr. Malley?
There will be bumps in the road. The bombers are going to continue. Settlement expansion will continue. There will be problems along the way, but what needs to happen is to continue despite those problems, because Abu Mazen is there today, and he is the hope for so many in terms of reaching some kind of settlement. But if he goes, there's no plan B.
Gentlemen, thank you both very much.
Thank you, Scott.
Thank you very much.
Robert Malley, Middle Eastern Project Director at the International Crisis Group, and joining us from his home in McLean, Virginia, which sounds like there are quite a few birds also joining us, the former U.S. Ambassador to Israel, Sam Lewis.